Good morning, everyone. It's a nice day to go an arms round, isn't it? You should try it sometime. I said you should try it sometime. Hint, hint. It's just the most magnificent feeling, I have to tell you. It really is. Because you have to go expecting nothing. Some people don't even know what to do when they see a monk with an arms pole. Fortunately, we live in a country where it's not an entirely unfamiliar sight. But I think it's becoming more and more rare, and there have been the odd occasion where people don't really know what to do. If they're fortunate enough, there'll be some bystanders, some people around, and they'll say, Swaminathan says here, offer something. Most of the time they come up to us with money. Most of the time. I say 9 times out of 10, people will walk up to us with money. And that's also after you stood outside their house or their front door for a while, because there's a certain decorum that we have to maintain as monks when we go on alms round. So we can't just go keep knocking on people's doors or ring their bell. You can't do that. You have to leave it to their merit power. So I can't go and stand outside and clear my throat. I'm here, hello. Because what if you're an unwelcome guest? You have to be entirely at the mercy of people who are willing to give. And that is what makes the whole thing so beautiful. Because sometimes people don't know why we do that. Just imagine if a king pretended to be a beggar for a day. Just think about that for a second. A king pretends to be a beggar for a day. That's the feeling that I get when I go on alms round. Today I feel like a king, thanks to the Buddha and the Dhamma and my great teachers who have made me feel this way. I have feel like I've conquered. I have feel like I have defeated many of my enemies. I'm sure a few still remain somewhere lurking around the dark corners, but soon enough. Now they can run, but they can't hide. Because I'm not going to give up until I have defeated all of them. So I feel like a king when I go on alms round, but pretending to be a beggar. But those who make their offerings, they don't know that. They don't know who stood outside their door. For some, it might simply be an inconvenience. There have been times where people see that there's this monk stood outside, and then they send someone to shut the door. So, either they're busy. You know, we never think bad of them. Should I? If I can think bad of them, I don't even deserve to go on alms round. What entitlement do we have to think bad of people? It is not people who are bad. If I don't have the vipaka to receive, then people won't give. Simple as that. Gone are the days where I used to point my fingers at others and fault them for my own losses and for my misfortunes, I sold that old cow. Apparently someone's bought it. Did you? Nope, not. So I sold that old cow, that old donkey. I sacrificed it at the altar of wisdom. So some people don't know though. And it's not like we go there every day because you don't let me do that. Even if I did, then, you know, every Sunday if they started to see a Swaminarayana, then people will know, okay, so he's a monk. Then they'll start asking around, who's a monk, what's he here for? Now, particularly the areas that we get to, because we don't have all the time in the world, I have to complete my Amsterdam before 12. And then those areas mostly are, I think, are populated by people who don't really know a lot about who monks are, what to do when you see them, when you see one. So as I say, most of the time they bring us money. Sometimes they bring us spare change. Because they feel that's what they think. He's a beggar, he needs some money. So, now there are days where you're stood outside the door. I mean, it's scorching hot, like, you know, between 11 and 12, you can imagine what it is like outside. And you're stood outside their door, you can't clear their throat. Sometimes the dogs start barking, that's the giveaway. And there are days where I felt, you know, mind the dog but beware of the master. And sometimes the master comes and there are times where they've asked, what do you want? So then I reply, anything you have left over, sir, or madam. There's the odd occasion where you hear, and they walk back in, and then they come out with something they can find. Like I said, usually money, spare change. And then I have to, because you can't engage in a conversation. That is also part of the etiquette of going on Armstrong. So you can't have like a full-on conversation. That wasn't me, by the way. But, sorry, whatever that was. So you can't have a full-on conversation with people. If it's something you have to refuse, all you can do is hold your hand over the arms pole. And then you can say a few things, like if you have any leftovers. So then they'll go. And sometimes they come back with uncooked food. So there have been days where they have brought back packets of soya meat, and uncooked rice, things like that. Once again, you have to cover your arms bowl. So all the while, you're just stood at one door, and this is taking a while. And then say, no, anything left over or anything you might have cooked for the afternoon, something that I can have for alms today. Ah, okay. So then they go back again. And then they might come back with something and then they offer it. Most people don't know what to do after they've offered. And so, if people are quite meritorious in and around that area, what happens is one gentleman or a lady would normally announce to their neighbors. I mean, it is quite a sight to behold, right? The whole procession of going on Amsterdam. It is not what you see at the monastery. That, you know, that's paradise. You know, after we've done the Buddha Puja, you come up to us and invite us, don't you? Swaminarayana, with infinite compassion towards us, would you please be so kind to walk up to the dhammat and offer the alms that we have prepared for you? And then all we have to do is come and hold the arms pole. And oftentimes we have to say, no, 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 not that much. Just a little, please. Just a little. No, no, that's too much. Just a little. Which is quite different to the experience that you get when you actually go out on arms round. But like I said, I feel like a king pretending to be a beggar. I honestly do. I feel like a king who loves his people. And he's doing so because, and I'm sure this is how all monks feel about this whole experience. I honestly consider it a privilege. The privilege to go on alms round. Because this is like merits on two legs. You know, typically you order takeaway, and that's the food. But here you are ordering the takeaway, and that is the food that you're offering, the Swami Nayan said. And sometimes there are like really memorable events when sometimes people are very emotional, they get very emotional, they get very carried away. I mean, this is the first time they've had something like that happen in their whole lives. And they just can't contain that excitement within themselves. And sometimes they just get on their knees and they really just want to know, when are you going to come back again, Swami? And I say, can you come back the next week, please? So I can't have a conversation with them, because then I'd have to stop there, get into conversations. Sometimes people invite you to come into their houses and say, Swami, please would you come in and bless the house or whatever. So we just have to keep quiet and look down and proceed. And then there will be others who say, no, Swami Nayan says don't go inside when they come to the alms round. And then I says, no, they don't take money. So, I mean, I suppose what I'm trying to say is, thank you for giving me the opportunity to enjoy that privilege of trying to lay down that first stepping stone for many people, so that one day they may be as fortunate as you are today. Because you have to first give before you get. If you give to the sasana, you can get from the sasana. You have given lots and lots and lots. Until even today you are still giving. You're giving because you know how much you can get out of it. That's how everything is in life. There is really no such thing called a free lunch. Really isn't. To get anything out of life, you have to make an investment. Anything. Once you begin to understand the principle of cause and effect, karma and vipaka, right? It's very obvious. That's how it all works. You have to give before you can get. Which means, if there's anything in life that you feel you're lacking right now, tell me why that is. Do you need to be a brain surgeon to work that out? No, it's very simple, isn't it? If there's anything in life you're lacking right now, it's because that's probably the one thing you've not given enough of. So take a moment to think about what it is that you might feel you're lacking in your life. Maybe it's motherly love. There's a child at our monastery. At the age of 6, he lost his mother. 6 or 5, I think. He lost his mother. I think I shared this story with you once. I did, didn't I? So he was fortunate enough to come and join our 18 minus Anagarika program. And when I got to know his story, he's a really nice, really good kid. Very kind, very gentle, and has some fantastic characteristics about him. So I said, Putha, what do you miss a lot? He said, I miss not having my mother. When I was very young, I lost her. I said, okay. So what you missed was motherly love. Not the mother. Motherly love. So what you have to do then is give that. So now that you have the opportunity to do that in the sasana, be a mother to everyone. So now he's what, 13 or 14 years of age, and oftentimes whenever I see him, I stop him and ask him, so what are you doing? I'm being a mother to everyone, Swami Nayan said. And he's taken that quite seriously. So he'll wake up in the morning and he'll go and wake everyone else up in the dormitory. Whenever he has a bottle of water, he'll always offer it to others before he takes a sip. See, these are amazing, isn't it? A 14-year-old boy to be doing things like that? Waking others up at home? When you were 14, how were you? When I was 14, my mother had to come and wake me up at least 3 or 4 times before I would wake up. But then now he's a mother. He wakes up before the alarm clock goes off, and then he goes and wakes others up. Just like a mother. He looks after others. I mean, what is the Buddha after all, isn't it? The Buddha is the embodiment of an infinite number of mothers, all put together. The love of an infinite number of mothers, the love of an infinite number of fathers. So, what we do when we go on alms round is actually quite literally that. Put down some stepping stones. So that is also part of the sasana. We lay down some stepping stones so that people have an opportunity to take that first step. When you look at the lives that they live, it's pretty obvious that they're very short on merits. I mean, I can imagine their lives must be really, really difficult. Their children probably don't get 3 square meals a day. Underprivileged. Living on the margin of poverty. Actually, in poverty. Month to month is probably quite a challenge. But then, you know, and compare that to the lives that you live. This is not magic. It's simply the power of merits, that's all. See, when we have something, it's always given to us by the powers that be to share it with those who are less privileged. That's always why you have something. Whenever you have something, think of it in that way. That's how great people think. When you have wisdom, recognize that wisdom was given to you so that you can give it to those who are less wise. That is why you have it. If you're wealthy, understand that it has been given to you so that you can give it to those who are less so. Are we recording still? Yeah? Thank you. If you're smart, if you're intelligent, then use it to serve. Look at people in society who are much less smart than you. Who can't work things out for themselves. Stand up so that you can be the strength to others who can't stand up on their own 2 feet. And then they will hold on to you when you stand. Because they just don't have the courage, the guts, the energy to stand up on their own. And then once you're stood up, walk forward. Because there are those who can't walk by themselves. They'll want you, they'll need you to carry them forward. And don't stop. Because if you stop, they'll all stop. There are those who look up to you for inspiration. There are those who are still alive because they look at you and they feel like life is worth living. Sometimes you don't even know these things. You know, if you can become someone like that, that's really a life worth having lived. These are the greatest ambitions in life. If you can live to give life to others, that's a great life, isn't it? Think of what a mother does for her child. There are times when, say a woman, she's frustrated with her life and she's decided to take her own life, and then she realizes that she's with child. Sometimes these are the milestones that entirely changes the course of one's life. I have known mothers like that. People have come to us and they've shared their stories with us. Some things went wrong somewhere down the line in their lives, and they were just frustrated and they decided, that's it, you know what, I'm giving up on life. There's no point living like this. Life is a living hell. And they decided that they were going to be off with themselves. They'd already planned the whole thing. Either to poison themselves or go and hang themselves or jump in front of a train or whatever. And then somehow, people might call it luck, others might just call it coincidence, whatever it might be, they realize that they're pregnant with a child. And then that changes the whole course of their life. And then they find new purpose. Here's someone who has decided that I'm going to live because someone else's life depends on mine. You know, on the first two occasions when the Mara invited the Buddha to pass into Parinibbana, what was his response? Mara, I'm not ready yet. Why? Because others still need me. The world still needs me. I have not entirely established the Mahasangha as I want to. I'm still working on that. So once my job is done, in other words, once I have served the purpose that I have come into this world to serve, which is to give life to others, to give hope to others, to give inspiration to others, to help others to get themselves to ultimate bliss. Once that is done, Mara, I need no invitation. Living for others. Aspire to that, ladies and gentlemen. Aspire to that. In each and every one of your lives, there will be some aspect of that. I'm sure there will be, particularly if you're a parent. There will be some aspect of that. Become more like that. Become more. Become more than you are. I mean, that is what life is for, isn't it? God gives you 80 years, 60 years, 70 years to become more than you are. Become more than you are. Whatever you are now, become more than that. There's only one way to receive, and that is to give. So give more, and you shall receive more. And what do you do when you receive more? You give even more. That's what you do. What are we here for? To give. To give the gifts that humanity deserves. Let us be that person. Let us be Santa. Let us be the angels. I want you to become an angel in someone's life. Can you? Can you do that? Live a life such that someone looks up to you and thinks of you, whether they say it out loud or not is another matter, but they think of you as their angel. She's my angel. He, our God, He is my angel. He is my provider. He is my protector. He is my guardian. He is the one who always leads me, guides me, shows me the path. Thanks to Him, I have gained so much in my life. Aren't there people like that in your lives? Ah, alas, today is World Teachers' Day. What are the chances of that? And we're talking about this. Teachers, give me a show of hands, teachers. If you have been a teacher in whatever way, give me a show of hands. Sad. Today we celebrate teachers. Even those who didn't put their hands up, you were also teachers. Although society didn't call you a teacher, you are a teacher. If you are a mother, you are also a teacher. If you are a father, you are also a teacher. What if you are the elder brother in the family? Oh, you are a teacher. What if you are a good friend to someone? What are you also? A teacher, absolutely. What is the Buddha? The world's greatest teacher. I want you to be like that. Become someone's angel. If you won't have someone in mind, think of someone who needs your help. Think of someone who needs you, your inspiration. Think of someone who will do something if they know that you are there for them. You know, many times in life, ladies and gentlemen, there are people who don't do what's good for them or right for them, not because they don't want to, but they just can't. They want to, but they don't have the courage. They don't have the willpower. They don't have someone to say, get up on your feet and start walking. Some people just need that extra kick up their backsides. Some people need that. Think of someone like that. And make a determination to be an angel to those people. Be a teacher to them. Enhance the value of your lives. You know, we have all been gifted to be human. Humanness is a gift that we have all received. You know, with that comes, it's a great power, and with great power comes what? Great responsibility. Responsibility. So now that you're human, which is a great power because you can influence other humans. And one human being can change the whole world in that way. If you don't believe me, look to my left. One human being is enough to change the whole world. Not me. One human being can change the whole world. I won't say that again. What is that? The what's making noise? Ah, okay. Is that fixable? Are we still recording? Okay. So, you know, today being World Teachers' Day and all that, right? Spare a moment for your teachers that I think you will do without me having to ask you or invite you to do. I'm sure you will because you're all very grateful people. So do spare a moment for your teachers. Give them a call. Let them know that they're still in your hearts and minds. Sometimes that's all they want. Thank them for what you have achieved in your lives. You know, if your teacher never taught you the alphabet, how today would you be giving speeches? These are the people who sit behind closed curtains and keep writing scripts for us. And then we come on stage and we start playing out those scripts. And then people give us an applause, don't they? It's always the actor who gets the standing ovation, not the scriptwriter, not the director. The actor gets the standing ovation. So we are all actors playing out the scripts that our teachers have written for us. So spare a moment for all those teachers, some who you might still have contact with when you get back home today, Give them a call. Send them a message. Send them a card. If you still have contact. If you don't, do a merit transfer. Think about all the good things you've been able to do with your life so far. And think about how your teachers have helped you to become who you are today. And do a merit transfer. So that wherever they may be, alive or not, if they can feel that you're doing it from the bottom of your heart and you're doing it genuinely, if they are somewhere where they can sense that, then they will rejoice in that. They will. And do it honestly and do it genuinely. And at the same time, think about how you can become a teacher to someone. See, on Teacher's Day, teachers should be born. Don't you think? What happens on a birthday? You are born. So on a Teacher's Day, teachers should be born. So I invite you all to think about one person to whom you can become a good teacher. Now there will be many of you who have been teachers. I asked you to put your hands up earlier and you did. Perhaps you've taught them math, science, language. Maybe you were a nursery teacher and you taught them how to tie their shoelaces or sing nursery rhymes, perhaps. Maybe you taught your students good manners. The thing is, with all these things, once the clock stops ticking, all of that is forgotten, isn't it? Whatever we've learned from our most beloved teachers, however much love and affection with which they taught us, all of that is gone when the clock stops ticking. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. That's it. But just imagine if you could teach someone something that is timeless. If you could teach someone something that is timeless, then that teaching will outlive the student's life. In fact, if the teaching is timeless, if the message is timeless, the message outlives the messenger. No? His message was a timeless one, wasn't it? Akalika Dham. Has the message not outlived the messenger? There you go. What if you could teach someone something that is timeless? What if you could teach someone something that once they have learnt it, they no longer rely on the teacher? Because all teachers have an expiry date, but not the teaching. How wonderful. How beautiful that is so. If you can give someone a teaching like that, you will become immortal. If you can teach someone something that is timeless, you will become immortal. Because you are that teaching. What's better, to give the message or to be the message? Which one's better? To give the message or to be the message? To be the message, indeed. If you give the message, then once the message is given, you are no longer of any relevance. But if you can be the message, then for as long as that message stands water, or holds water, stands true, stands the test of time, then you will also be like that. In other words, if you can convey a timeless message, then you become immortal. Time can only take away your body. It can only take away your mind. But if you are the message will always live. When does the truth die? When does the truth die? The truth never dies. What is the difference between truth and knowledge? What do you think? Between the difference between the truth and knowledge. See, the truth is always timeless. When there's a mind that bears that truth, we call that knowledge. Although Buddhas come and go, the truth that the Buddha teaches, that's always there. That's why he claims the Four Noble Truths. They're always there. So when a Buddha passes into Parinibbana, he leaves the Four Noble Truths behind so that the next Bodhisattva can come and discover the same Four Noble Truths. Not four different ones, the same four. Today's sermon is very philosophical. And I'm going to forget to precept you as well. But these are for my personal musings. Huh? I enjoy this. Can I enjoy at your expense? Is that all right? But I hope you can see the profoundness in these statements. Because I want you all, ladies and gentlemen, to become immortal. Really. You can't become immortal by trying to live longer. You can't. Give up. Just give up. You can't become immortal by trying to live longer. People think that they can. So they try to extend their lives to become immortal. What fools they are. The Buddha says, appasutayam puriso. Balivaddhova jirati, mansani tassa vaddanti, panya tassa na vaddati. Appasutta is someone who has heard little. Sutta is to hear. Appa, little. One who has heard little, one who has understood little, one who has comprehended little, little what? Of the truth. Only ages and grows older and increases in size like a cow. They just keep on putting on weight, that's all. Nothing more than that happens. And they grow old. Mansa nitasa vaddanti. What is mansa? Muscle. In bodily size they grow. Panya tasa navaddati. Panya is wisdom. Their wisdom doesn't grow. So one who has heard little, one who has not come across the teaching, one who has not understood the Dhamma, all that happens, he's talking about human beings, of course, he's talking about us, you and me. He says, if you have not come across the Dhamma, if you have not spent time with the Dhamma, if you don't allow the Dhamma to consume you, and if you don't consume the Dhamma, then all that happens with living is you growing in size. You'll keep putting on. That's all. But your wisdom doesn't grow. But as human beings, we have the faculty of wisdom. We have the faculty of intelligence. These are the things that we have to work on. And for that, as the Buddha teaches, contemplate the Dhamma. Understand the Dhamma, reflect upon the truth, assimilate the Dhamma. And that's what we're all here for. So, take on the Dhamma, understand the Dhamma, ladies and gentlemen, and become a teacher on this Teacher's Day. I ask you to do that. It could be your son, that's fine. Your child at home, that's fine, perfectly fine. It doesn't have to be some stranger that you don't know that you have to, you know, you think I'm going to take someone on and make them my student. Not necessary. Someone who's worthy of it. But make sure that it's someone who's worthy of it. Someone who's worthy of it. I know there'll be some among you who'll try to give the gift of Dhamma to others. You'll try once, you'll try twice, you'll try a third time. If it looks like they're not interested, let them be for a while. Do them a favor. Let them be for a while. That's not to say you've completely discarded them or decided and you've made a firm decision that, you know, I'm never going to help them again. No. Just for now, lead them to a side. Work on something or someone who is less work, you can work with, or sorry, more workable. Someone who you can work with. Find someone like that. You know, there are many people in your lives who cross paths with you, people who look up to you. Is there anyone in this room who can say, no, Swami, there's no one in my life who looks up to me? Come on. I can't believe that. If no one looks up to you, tell me, I'll come look up to you. Come and stand here once you've worshipped me, I'll look up to you. Remember, you're a mother. You're a father. You're a brother. And you, madam, a sister. Don't forget that. You're a teacher. You're someone's boss. You're someone's best friend. They've trusted you enough to make you their best friend. You're the one someone comes up to you and asks for advice when they're lost. No? Is there anyone in this room who can say, no one's ever come to me and asked for a piece of advice? Well, there you go then. People look up to you. Is there anyone in this room who can say that no one's ever come to me for counsel? When they've had a problem? When they couldn't work out left or right? There's not a single soul in this room who can claim that. Meaning, you are all people who someone looks up to. Someone out there looks up to you. Then, today's Teacher's Day. Give them a teaching that will make you immortal. Give them a teaching that will make you immortal. Give them a teaching so that that teaching they will pass on to someone else, and they onto someone else, and they onto someone else, and they onto someone else. And for as long as the teaching lives, you live. You can't do this with money. You can't do it with money. Because the moment you pass money over to someone, it becomes their property. Right? When you buy a piece of land, you take the land, you give the money. Now whose money is it? Whose money is it? Now it's that person's money. So if you buy the property, then you give the seller your money, and now it's their money. They don't walk around saying, you know, this guy, he gave me some money. How good of him to give me this money? He doesn't say that. Because there's an exchange. He feels like he's given you what you need and you've given him what he needs. And then that's it, it's a deal. But when you give the timeless message, it's not given in exchange for anything. What do I charge you for this message? How much do you pay? Do I look up at you when you offer alms into my alms bowl? This lady, she offered something. I have to preach to her. This man, he didn't offer me anything. This lady, she only offered me a biscuit. Right, fine. Come and ask me a Dhamma question the next day. And see if I'll answer it for you. No, ice at the alms bowl. Because this is a timeless message. So, today being Teacher's Day, I invite you all to be that angel in someone's life. Be that your child, be that your son, your daughter, your mother, your godmother, your father, your grandfather. Maybe he's still looking for an angel in his life. He's 85, he's still looking for an angel. If you don't help him, he'll be waiting for the angels. You'd better help him. Your friend, make a resolve. I will give my friend the timeless message. Make that determination. And take an action. Otherwise it's just a fantasy, isn't it? You know, one day. When does one day come? One day comes someday. Not one day. Make those days specific. That's why they have today. Or tomorrow. Make those days very specific. Have a date in your mind. Right, on this day I'm going to send this person a link. I'm going to share this video with them. I'm going to bring that person with me to the Sunday sermon. Next time I go to the monastery, I'm going to take them with me. Because I want to give them the timeless message. Become a bodhisattva in their lives. Remember when the bodhisattva made a resolve, I want to become a Buddha, and when I do, I will save everyone in this whole world. I will not leave behind anyone. That was the resolve of the bodhisattva. We may not be able to do so for the whole world, ladies and gentlemen, but in your little world, there are a few people, aren't there? In your little world, that could be your immediate family, your nuclear family, maybe some people of your extended family, maybe at your workplace, maybe your closest friends, maybe there's a cousin who really gets along well with you, he or she is very fond of you. Maybe it's that person. Maybe there's someone at work who you know is always stressed out. They're always stressed. They're always just running around like a headless chicken. You know, but they're working their socks off, but they're just not very happy, very frustrated. Right? Perhaps all they need is for you to shine a little bit of light on them. Become that angel for them. Of course, please make sure that they are someone who is deserving of it. Someone who is worthy of it. So, if you try once and they say, I'm not interested, or they give those signs, then step aside for the time being. You can try again later. Persist, but don't insist. That's a good one, isn't it? You can persist, but don't insist. Because if you keep on insisting, then they might get annoyed. But you can keep on persisting within yourself. If it doesn't work with one person, what can you do? Try the next. How many people are there in this world besides you? 8 billion. Minus one. There are 8 billion people in this world. You're spoiled for choice. If you want to be a teacher to someone, if you want to be an angel to someone, there are 8 billion people in this world. Be that special human being for someone. You know, I've said this to you before. Any husband here, I'm sure you are a very loving husband. Any wife here, I'm sure you're a very loving wife. Give true love, pure love. Give your husband a love he has never experienced in his whole life in samsara. This is not the kind of love you will read on magazines or you will get to hear in family counseling therapy. No. Give him and show him pure love, selfless love, a love that he has never experienced from any wife he's ever had in samsara. then he will call you his angel. And truly mean it. Then he will never call anyone else his angel. Even today, or another day. Show him what angels are. Show him what angels are made of. Show him. Show him what pure love is, because your husband has probably never experienced pure love. He's only ever experienced selfish love, quite probably. Love where something was given because something else was expected. That is only a transaction. That's transactional love. Do the same for your wives. Give your wife a kind of love she's never experienced before. I mean, she's all yours. She's given her life to you. She's all yours. See, you have the distinct privilege to show one human being, at least one human being, a love that they have never experienced before. And if you have children, then even better. You have a family. If you are a family man, if you are the mother of the family, if you are the father of the family, if you are the brother or the sister of the family, you have the distinct privilege to show each member of your family a kind of love that they have never experienced before. If you are the brother in the family, love your sisters in a way that your sisters will never want another brother. Because they will know that none can ever be like you. If you are the sister, love your brother in that way. So that your brother would never wish for another sister, because no sister could love them like that. Why even 2,500 years after the Buddha's passing away do people come and get down on their knees in front of him? Where's his replacement? I ask you, where is his replacement? If someone else would walk up to you and say, hey, guess what, I'm also the Buddha. Are you going to take that? Are you going to accept that? No, of course not. If someone else would come up to you and said, I'm also Jesus, would you accept that? No, of course not. Of course not. Because they have shown you a kind of love that you know cannot be substituted. No one else can play that part. You probably already feel like that about your mother, about your father. No one can take my father's place. But if you are that father, I ask you, give your children a kind of love that they will never have experienced from any father in all samsara. Because if they do, ladies and gentlemen, if they get to experience that kind of love, guess what will happen? They will make a firm resolve never to be born again, because they will know that no other father can ever show me this kind of love. And then they'll work their way to immortality. And then they will not have another father again anyway. So how about you be that father? Open up your children's lives to the greatest love that humanity possesses. You know, this kind of love is among us. It's with us. We have it. There's an abundance of it with the Mahasangha. In the Sasana, it's all about love. Love is in the air. Can't you sense it? But I ask you, become that father, become that mother. You know, become that mother where when your child goes to school and he sits down with his classmates and then they're all talking about how their mothers love them. Become that mother, your son, when he's asked, how does your mother love you? And every other child has already said their piece. Your child is speechless. Because every other child will say, well, my mother, she gets me chocolates. She makes me all these nice things that I like to eat. She gives me pocket money. She takes me on trips. She's going to buy me a bike on my birthday. This is what all the other children will be saying. But then it comes to your child. Does your mother child you? Sorry, does your mother love you? They ask your child, and he's speechless. Because he doesn't know how to turn all that love into words. He doesn't know how to convey that love into words. How to relate that love into words. He just doesn't know. It's like if I asked you the question, does the Buddha love you? How much? Spell it out in words for me. There you go. 4 incalculable eons on our behalf. 6 years under that Bodhi tree. Without batting an eyelid. Giving up his own children and his wife. Even in his penultimate life. And when he gave his children up, he made a firm resolve. I give my children up so that I can go on to become the king of the Sasana. It was hurtful, it was painful, but he did that all for us. So then I ask you, would you be willing to give your children up like that to slavery? Of course not. But he did that. Thus, no one can be a substitute to the Buddha. They are the epitome of love. They've reached the pinnacle. They define love. They're the definition of love. My ask of you on Teacher's Day is become someone like that. Have a think on your way home today. On your way home today, have a think about it. How can I, as a wife, show my husband love in a way that he has never seen before? So for that, you'll have to put aside all those, perhaps, you know, maybe there are things that will happen between the two of you. Maybe little grudges, minor. Maybe little resentments, maybe little heartaches, maybe little feelings of ill will, distrust. You're going to have to put all that to aside now. Because otherwise there'll be a filter. Those filters will block. Those filters will block that love. And you won't be able to emanate it in its entirety. So for that, you have to stop thinking about yourself. Because when you are center stage, you can't think of anyone else. That's why all love is self-ish. Every other kind of love is selfish because you always have to first think about yourself and then you think about what it means to other people. But I'm talking about a love where you are selfless, altruistic love. This is not just for the sake of loving others, ladies and gentlemen. This is for the sake of your salvation as well. If you wish to become an arahant one day, you have to become someone who can love selflessly. You have to, there's no choice there. If you want to become someone who does not suffer, no matter what, you have to be someone who can love selflessly. These are the goals that you have to aspire to. I'm sure you'll have plenty of goals in your lives. You want to start up a new business, you want to, you know, become a professional in your career, you want to go become a chartered engineer now that you are one, right? These are the goals might be in your lives, but I'm saying there are other goals that you must also have, more grand goals, more glorious goals. Goals that actually elevate your lives from an average human being to a magnificent human being. Did you come into this world to be average or to become magnificent? When you can become magnificent, why settle for average? You can become magnificent. So why settle for average? So on your way home, have a think of one person. Excuse me. One person for whom you can make that difference in their lives. And what three things you could do differently? It's good if you can become, if you can make it very specific, because then you can take action, right? If you don't make anything specific, you can't take actions. Any actionable goal has to be a SMART goal. So think of three things specifically that you could do. To do only one thing and one thing alone. Give them the timeless message. Sometimes you'll have to speak to them differently. Maybe for that you'll have to, from here on, be the one who wakes up in the morning and takes them their bed tea. Maybe that's what you're going to have to do, so that in 2 years' time you can actually get them interested in listening to the Dhamma. In 2 years' time, maybe. But you know, hey, you're going to live a lifetime with them. What's 2 years? He's your husband, she's your wife. You're going to live the rest of your life with them. So if all it takes is one bed tea in the morning, if that's all it takes... These are all going to be part of your paramita. Excuse me. I'm not saying this just for the sake of it. I'm saying this because these will all become part of your paramita. These will become part of your perfections. Whatever good you do to others, does it not leave an imprint on you? Can you be good to others without being good to yourself? Answer that question for me, please. Can you be good to others without being good to yourself? Can you? You can't. Can you be evil to others without being evil on yourself? Can you? No. What we are to others is what we are unto ourselves. How simple these truths are. So if you're always happy, what does that tell me about the people around you? If you're always happy, I know one thing for certain. It's just a joy to be around you. It has to be. If you are someone who is always happy, who's always very cheerful, who's always very joyful, so upbeat, always so charismatic, larger than life. If you are that kind of person, then here's one thing I know about you. It's such a joy to be around someone like you. It is. It has to be. Because if what you get is only what you give, you can't have so much joy if you are not the source of joy for others. It cannot be. What is the wettest place on earth? What is the wettest place on earth? The great oceans. Where does the whole world get its water supply from? When the sun comes out and it shines bright, where does it start sucking all the water so that it can pack it all up into clouds and take them where no seas can go, no water can go, and then release all that water onto this dry and barren earth? The oceans. So what is the wettest place on earth? The place that gives the most water to the rest of the world. So who do you think is going to be the happiest man alive? Wouldn't you like to be the happiest man alive? Put your hand up and say, "No, Swami, I don't want to be the happiest man. I like to be the grumpiest man alive." If you want to be the happiest man alive, you tell me, ladies and gentlemen, then, is it rocket science? Is it rocket science? If you want to be the happiest man alive, what must you do? Become a source of happiness to the people around you. That's all. Ask yourself that question every morning when you wake up and when you go to bed. Ask yourself this question in the morning. Am I the happiest man alive? Not quite. Right. Then work out a plan for the day. Work out a plan for the day. And then at the end of the day, before you go to bed, ask yourself this question. How many people have I given happiness to today? And in what ways? That is going to be your merit transfer. A merit transfer is you rejoicing in your own good deeds. That's what it is. We call it a merit transfer. It's not so much a transfer, really. You're just rejoicing in your own merits. That's what you're doing. You can't actually transfer merits, by the way. Although we call it a punyanumodana, the Pali term is not punyanumodana, it's pratyanumodana. It is not the merit itself that you're transferring. What you're really saying is, listen all you all, listen out there, all of you, I have done these good deeds. We have done all these good deeds. If it pleases you, rejoice in them. That is what a merit transfer is. You're not really transferring the merits. You're simply making an invitation for others to witness and rejoice. If they are not happy with it, they can't earn any of those merits. That's the way it works. Otherwise, no one has to do merits, right? We can all just be doing merits and keep transferring it to other people. Then no one will be in the four great hells, would they? Once in a while, we go to the Dehivala Zoo. Then what should we do? Just keep transferring merits, you know, some to the lions, some to the zebras, some to the porcupines. So although we call it a merit transfer, it's not really a transfer. But those animals in the four great hells, in the zoo, you know, they cannot rejoice in those merits because they don't have the faculties of wisdom and intellect and intelligence to understand that what you have done is something good. That they cannot understand. Because their time is past. They were too late. Now it's too little, too late. Anyhow, my ask of you again. So when you wake up in the morning, ask yourself, am I the happiest man alive? Yes or no? No. Right? In which case, I still have work to do. So, work out a plan for the day. Who is it that I can help today? Have you not heard that the Buddha used to do this every morning? Even after he had become the happiest man alive? It was his habit. It is called the Mahakaruna Samapatti. Or the absorption of compassion. Out of compassion, he looks at the world and he asks himself, who is it that I can help today? Who can I help today? Who needs the Buddha? Who has the merits? Who has enough merits to receive the Buddha into their lives? And then, mattered not where they lived. If they had sufficient merit power, he would get up and on his own 2 feet, he would travel for miles at a stretch, if that was what was necessary. Even after he had become the happiest man alive. Perhaps he just wanted to teach us all a lesson. That's what great teachers are like. Even when they have achieved, even when they are accomplished, they still keep doing the things that they have done, that they had done, to reach those levels of perfection so that they can continue to be an inspiration to people like you and I, so that we can always keep looking up to them. So do something every day to give pure love to others, pure love. And I mean pure love. I don't need to come here and teach you to give love to others. I think you can do that without my help. I mean pure love. Give them the timeless message. The timeless message. The message that makes you become immortal. That message. The truth. If you can't do it today, then that's fine. Do it tomorrow. Let's say you've just been incredibly busy the whole day and you just couldn't do anything about it. Right? Okay, that's fine. When you go to bed tonight, you think to yourself, today was not one of those great days, but tomorrow I will. And start again tomorrow. Keep doing this every day. Do this for a month. To be precise, do it for 28 days from here on. And see the impact it will make on your lives. If you can't do three things, do one thing. One thing every day. One thing every day, consistently, for the next 28 days. To give pure love to the people in your lives. One thing to one person, that's enough. You don't have to do the whole, don't need to boil the ocean. Just do one thing for one person and see the impact it will have on you. For now, take my word for it, in 28 days' time, you won't need to take my word for it. You will become the word. You will have become the word. What's better, to give the message or to be the message? To be the message. How does one become the message? By first listening to the message, understanding it, applying it, and then reaping results. Then you are the message. What is an arahant? Someone who gives you the message or someone who is the message? An arahant is someone who is the message. So that's what I mean. Be an angel to those who look up to you. There will always be someone who looks up to you. Always. Even on your deathbed, there will be someone who will come and look up to you. Even on your deathbed. So, however much time you have between now and that last day of your life. Okay? So, if you have, say, 20 years left, 10 years left. I hear giggling, some people giggling in the room. 20 years, so what are you thinking? Guru Hamro says all the time, if you can't live longer, live deeper. It's a good saying. If you can't live longer, live deeper. I mean, the truth is, what today we can't really live much longer than we are destined to, but the difference in our lives is how deep we have lived, isn't it? That's why some people go on to become immortal. They are never forgotten. Their names remain in the history books. They've lived deep lives, very profound lives. A long life is not celebrated, really. If people celebrate a long life, it's just to make you happy. There you have it. It's true though. If people celebrate you for having lived a long life, that is only to make you happy. So one day, if you know, for your 85th birthday, 90th birthday, everyone gathers around you and they're there to blow their candles, blow your candles. I'd say, imagine you have 90 actual candles on your cake. That must be one big cake, right? But say they actually have 90 candles and they blow it, or they say, happy birthday, and then they give you a round of applause. It's to make you happy. Don't be fooled. It's just to make you happy. That's when they celebrate long lives. But what about when they celebrate deep lives? Profound lives. Then it matters not how long you have lived. Then it matters not. Just imagine an arahatun mahanse, he dies at the age 25. If people knew that he was really an arahant, that he actually became an arahant before he passed away into parinibbana, how do you think they're going to celebrate that occasion? That will probably be declared a national holiday. So that everyone could attend the procession and earn merits out of it and rejoice in the goodness of the Rahatan Mahanse. But he's only lived until lived to the age of 25. Not 105, only 25. That's what I mean, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I mean. It's not about how long you have lived. Can you outlive a turtle? How about an elephant? I mean, you can't outlive a turtle. How long do they live? 110, 120? Sometimes even longer. You can't outlive a turtle. But do you celebrate the life of a turtle? You don't. Why not? Because all they've done is lived long. Overrated. That's not what's significant. That's not what's important about human lives. What's important about human lives is what you have been able to achieve in those days that you have lived. How many hearts you have healed. That is what God has put us all on earth for. To heal hearts and to mend minds. To help the weak. To give a helping hand to the feeble. To help those who can't stand on their own two feet, help them stand up. To give light and help, give vision to those who are blind. That is why I speak. I speak so that those who are blind here can open their eyes and start to see. That's why I speak. I have come here so that those who cannot walk can stand up and start walking. That's why I have come. I want you to do the same. Speak. Not because you have to say something, but because you have something to say. Many speak because they have to say something. I'm sure you know people like that. They just can't keep quiet. They just can't keep quiet. Those are the people you invite to parties. They're good to have at a party. Why? Because at a party, someone has to do the talking. Because you can't talk and eat at the same time, that's why. Did you get what I meant? Because so if someone else is doing the talking, you can do the eating. Right, so it's always good to have people who just keep on jabbering, keep on talking at a party. But that's not what's interesting. That's not what's great. So don't speak because you have to say something. Speak because you have something to say. Something important. Something life-changing. Something transforming. Something inspirational. Something motivational. Something engaging. Something uplifting. Something that gives people life. See how highly I think of all of you? I'm giving you a task on Teacher's Day. And I think each and every one of you is capable of that. You are. Because with every one of you, there is someone, at least one person in this world who looks up to you. I promise you that. As I said, if you can't find someone, come and tell me, I will look up to you. Be that angel. So on your way back home, have a think about to whom it is you're going to be that angel. Who are you going to be that inspiration to? Who is that weak person to whom you are going to be the strength? Who is it? They could be 6 years old, they could be 60 years old. Matters not. If they're alive, they're fair game. Have a think, ladies and gentlemen. Really have a think. Seriously have a think. On this Teacher's Day, resolve to become a teacher. You don't need any other qualifications for that. You are already qualified by being here. Your qualification is being here because you have been given the truth. The truth has been revealed to you. You know today that there is such a thing called unlimited, unconditional happiness. You know that it's there. Maybe you're yet to experience it, but at least you know that it's there. You know that you don't forever have to be in fool's paradise because paradise is also there. You know that. That is what qualifies you. Where do you think the majority of people in this world live? In paradise or fool's paradise? What proportion do you think? 10%? 20? 60? 80? 90? Am I getting warmer? 99.9999999. 9. And then some. That's where people live, in fool's paradise. Scratching each other's backs for pleasure. Fooling each other. That's what fools do in fool's paradise. They just keep fooling each other. Making others happy so that they make them happy. That's what fool's paradise is all about. It's a playground for fools. You can't blame them or fault them because they've not seen any other. They've not seen an alternative. Where you don't see until you are shown. That's the way it is. So now that you have begun to see, give the gift of sight. Give the gift of sight. Insight. To anyone who deserves it, who is worthy of it, who has the good fortune to bump into someone like you. Perhaps a year or two before, or a year or two ago, if someone bumped into you, that was their bad merit. Not bad merit, but their sins. I can see you silently agreeing with me. You can say that again, Swami Nansa. Perhaps a year or two ago, if someone bumped into you, that was for their sins. But I don't believe that is so today. Today, I think even if a stranger bumps into you, it is for their merits. Chances are, even when they're angry with you, you will return a smile. Even when they want to tear you a new page, and even when you know that it is they who are at fault, you will apologize. You know, it takes a great human being to apologize when it's not their fault. Would you agree? To apologize when it's not your fault? Because you're not apologizing. You're not apologizing for the fault. You're doing it because when you do that, when you apologize to them, they drop their guard. They're at peace. Actually, it's a truce. You're apologizing out of compassion. But if you're among ignoble people, asat purushas, they will mock you for doing that. They'll give you abuse. They'll give you an earful for doing something like that. They'll say, are you crazy? Are you mad? Why did you apologize to that man? He's the one who was at fault. If I were you, and then they'll tell you all the things that you used to do. They said, don't be so meek. What are you, a man? These are the things that your friends, for whatever reason we still call them friends. These are the things that people will tell you. Don't fall for any of that. Because greatness is something more than that. You have to think about it from their perspective. Even when you're the one who's being wronged, even when you're the one who's been disadvantaged, if you can think on behalf of the other person, when you know that hurt people, when you know that they've only hurt you because they're hurt, so when you know that they're hurt, what do you have towards them? Anger, resentment, spite, or compassion? Compassion. So if all you have to do is say, I'm so sorry, then they drop their guard. Then they, what do they normally say? Ah, it's fine, it's fine. You're the one who's supposed to be saying that. But they'll say, no, it's fine, it's fine. But here's what will happen. 100 yards later, they'll come back and they'll ask you a question. Excuse me. You know that time that I bumped into you? It was actually I who bumped into you. How come you apologized? No one's ever done like that to me, ever in my life before. What was that all about? Why did you apologize when it was I who had to apologize? And then you say, ah, I thought you'd never ask. Let's get down to business. Now you can show them love. Now you can show them love. That's what I mean, folks, you know. We are gifted with human life. Look at those four-legged beasts. Go home, look at your cat, look at your dog. They're only a cat and a dog. What can they do? They're at your mercy. They're at your mercy. No one will ever be at their mercy. Will they? But you, ladies and gentlemen, are human beings. You have the capacity of mercifulness. Meaning you can be a source of mercy to others. That is the gift of humanness. That's a gift. Use it. Give it. Have a soothing effect on everyone who comes across, who crosses paths with you. Cool them. People are always heated up, so heated up. Cool them. All you have to do is give them a loving word, that's all. Lend an ear. Give an apology. Be the first to apologize in any situation. Caveat legal situations. Because then they'll say, whatever you say now will be used against you in a court of law. Right, so maybe in a legal situation, just be careful what you say. But in any other situation, because you still have to live life, right, in this jungle that you call lay life, because not everyone's like you. Because I'm sure in some situations, if you apologize, then they will take you to court, because that is admission of guilt. So they won't understand what I taught you today. Then you can't say, I only apologize because I wanted them to be okay. They won't take that word for it. They are Maras people. Don't be Maras people. You know, you are a Buddha's person. So we have this gift of humanness. Use it wisely. Most people don't know how to use it wisely. Most people don't know that. Most people don't know how to use the gift of humanity. And that's why they don't get a second chance. That's why they don't get a second chance. If you abuse something, you tend not to get it again. If you use something, you will keep on getting it. Use. Don't abuse. Use your gift of humanity. Use the capacity to love. Use it. Don't abuse it. Use it. Use it to give love to others without expecting anything in return. Your capacity for compassion, use it, ladies and gentlemen. Use it. Because you're capable of it. So use it. Your pet cat, your dog, they don't have it. So they can't use it. You have it. Use it. Don't keep it hidden. Use it. See, what you've learned at school, what you learned at university, you use it, don't you? You use it to help other people. You use it to develop your country, your nation. You use it. So what I'm saying is, you were born human. You didn't have to go to school to learn how to be human. You were born human. So the capacity to love, you were born with. Use it. Use it. Start at home. Start at home. It is not just the mothers here who are capable of motherly love. You are all capable of motherly love. Did you know that? I'm not a mother. Biologically, I could never be one. But you come and ask the children at the monastery? What's a mother? It's the capacity of a chitta. A chitta is a mother. Because when you instill the virtues of a mother into a chitta, there you go. Lo and behold, now that's a mother. You were all born human. You didn't have to go to school to learn how to be human. So, you know, dig deep and find all those wonderful, amazing, incredible things that you are all capable of. Find them. There'll be plenty of those gems inside. Unearth them. Take them out. Take them out, polish it and hold it up like this. And let it shine in all its glory. So that others can bask in that glory. Take out your compassion and hold it out there so that those who need it can come and bathe in the warmth of your compassion. Take out loving kindness and hold it out there. Because there'll be those who are thirsty for it. Take it and hold it. Become a source of loving kindness for others. Because they need it. They don't know how to do that for themselves. So you first be the one to show them how to. And then when they see you doing it, they'll realize, ah, so if he's doing it, probably I can do it as well. Where was that? Help people find the love that's in their hearts. The biggest curse that people have is they don't know how to love themselves. They don't. Trust me, they don't. Every other person you bump into is someone who hates themselves. Some aspect of them they don't like. They don't know how to accept themselves for who they are. Do you disagree? Every other person you bump into, something about them they don't like. And they hate themselves for it. Either because of their past, or because of their present, or because of their future. Teach them how to love themselves first. People need that teaching, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, people need that. If you don't teach them, they're never going to know. Sometimes they don't learn this stuff at home. Because mothers and fathers of today are far too busy trying to teach them science and math. Because what they want to make out of them are doctors and engineers and lawyers and so on. Mathematicians and bankers. Far less good human beings. But you can do that. So stop thinking that you're only a mother to your own child. Every child out there needs that motherly love that you have, that you possess. Because what is a mother after all? It's a chitta. With the compassion of a mother. It's a chitta with the loving kindness of a mother. That's what a mother is. A mother is not a mother to anyone. It's just a chitta. Who does a chitta belong to? Does a chitta belong to the previous chitta? Or to the next chitta? Chittas don't belong to anyone or anything for that matter. It doesn't even belong to itself. So how does a mother belong to a child? Or to anyone? That's what I'm saying. Be a mother. Be a mother. I want all of you to be mothers. In a chitta. You don't have to sacrifice your bodies for that. Let someone else do that. What's easier? Becoming a mother physically or becoming a mother mentally? The physical one is easier. Birds and beasts do that. But to become a mother in a chitta, that's not an easy task. But that you are capable of, because you are a human being. So I want all of you to become a mother. Love like a mother, protect like a father. Protect. There are many those who need protection. Protection from whom? Who do you think? From themselves. The father at home tends to protect his children from others. The father typically tends to believe that I have to protect my family from the threats that come from around. So he builds up a 6-foot-high wall and puts barbed wire around it. And then he hires a security firm to install CCTV cameras because he wants to protect his family. Little does he know that his daughter at home has already started having feelings towards the village thug. Now how do you protect? That's what I'm saying. You know, becoming a father biologically, that's overrated. Becoming a mother biologically, that's overrated. People will do that, let people keep doing that, it's fine. But I'm here to ask you to do something much more than that. You are all capable of becoming mothers and fathers. I'm neither mother nor father biologically. I'll tell you, I wanted to become a father. For whatever reason, it didn't work out. Today, I'm glad. For two reasons. One, it meant that I could come to the sasana with little baggage to worry about. And two, it meant that today I can love everyone the same. All children, I love the same. All people, I love the same. Because I don't feel I am particularly a father to anyone. What I want all of you to do is to become that. That's what I like. That's what I'd like for you all to be. Because if you can love selflessly, ladies and gentlemen, you will be the biggest beneficiary of that love. You will benefit most from it. He who makes others happy is the happiest of them all. So, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the happiest of them all? He who makes others happy is the happiest of them all. What time is it? It's 10:30. I didn't precept, yes. Let's precept. So I'll precept you now. I mean, these were the precepts. In your precepts, what do you resolve to do? Panatipata veramani sikkhapadan samadhi. I refrain from taking life. Refraining from taking life is one. But what about giving life? Refraining from taking life is good. What's great? Giving life. Adinnadana veramani sikkhapadan samadhi. I refrain from theft. Refraining from theft is good. If thieving is bad, refraining from theft is good. But what's great? Giving. So now that I've been teaching you how to give life, love, compassion, kindness, loving selflessly. Now you're great. If you can resolve to do all those things, if you can start doing all those things, you're already great. Do you want me to precept you as well? Shall we come back down one step to good? We'll do it anyway, because it's customary. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. What we are trying to do here, this is a little bit unorthodox. And I'm not ashamed of it, and I'm not afraid of it. Personally, I don't think this is conventional Buddhism. Because it's not Buddhism at all, really. This is the philosophy of life. How to live the best life that you can have. How to become the best human being that you can be. That is what this philosophy is about. You can call it Buddhism if you want. You know I'm not a monk, although I look like one. This is only my uniform. In my mind, I'm no one. So, let's take a moment then. After I have precepted you, I would like to invite someone today. Someone very special. He's one of our Anagarikas, young Anagarikas at the monastery. He joined us when he was 13 or 14. He's been with us for the last 2.5 years. He was the first to join the monastery, and then soon after came his father, who is now a monk. His mother, who is a Sihasravika, because by the time she came in, she'd already passed the age that we unfortunately have to have set in place to become an Anagarika. But there's very little difference between Sihasravikas and Anagarikas. The only difference is every night they go back home. If you're an Anagarika, then you're in our custody. And then, after the mother came his two sisters. And they're both Anagarikas. So the whole family is now in the sasana. These are people who are so blessed. It's something even I couldn't give my own family. But just imagine, all five of them? Today, to have inherited the sasana? And all three children, very intelligent, used to go to international schools. Today, they hold a very special place at the monastery. The younger sister, I know when she grows up, she's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I think she's only still 13, but she can talk for England when she starts speaking, and she gives the Dhamma pitch perfect. At 13 years of age, she will be able to teach you the Dhamma for no other reason than having been immersed in the Dhamma. Because there is no such thing called old or young, is there? These are all chittas, individual chittas. So they have really benefited from the sasana. So today, as we have the Pindapatha, I brought him along as a little gift. And I asked him if he could speak a few words to share his experience of having come into the sasana, because today is Teacher's Day. So perhaps in him, although he's only 14 years of age, you just might see a little teacher. But before that, otherwise I'll forget again. Let us all bring our palms together in veneration of the most magnificent one, the perfect one, the undefeated one, the unvanquished one, he who is the epitome of perfection, the fountain of loving kindness, and the source of compassion for all humanity. It is to his name we make this veneration, and as we do so, let us also remind ourselves that we renew our pledge of allegiance to the noble path, and from this day till the end, we shall walk the noble eightfold path, so that we can attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana and help as many others as possible along the way.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Okay. Right. Are you ready? Right, the stage is yours then.
Theron Samne, permission from Venerable Thero, and my dear mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters. So, I'll ask you a small question. What is the sasana? What is the sasana? Okay, it's not a small question, it's a big one. Is it the alms bowl? Is it the robes? Is it the monks? I'll tell you a small question. Long, long ago, in the time of Lord Buddha, one day Ananda Thero went to meet Lord Buddha, and he asked Lord Buddha, he told Lord Buddha, "Oh great one, I feel that half of the sasana is noble companionship." And then what did Lord Buddha tell? Did he tell yes? No, he told no. Ananda, not half of the sasana, the full sasana is noble companionship. My name is Tarshan Narasingha. I'm 16 years old, and it's been about 2.5 years since I became an Anagarika. So before these fortunate 2.5 years, I lived in Nugegode with my parents and my two sisters. My mother and father were both engineers, and me and my two sisters went to international schools in Colombo. So as a family, we went on trips, we went abroad, we had parties, we did various things we knew that could make us happy. So if I take myself, I played video games, watched films and listened to soap. And I was so addicted to music. I had violins, pianos, organs, guitars, many musical items. And if I didn't get the chance to listen to music a particular day, I would feel like my life was empty. I would get the feeling that I was not fulfilled that day. So that was how I spent my life. I was like a headless arrow. I didn't have an aim in my life. So one day, I got the chance to listen to one of Guhanro's Deshana. It was about relief from vexation and those things. And after listening to this sermon, I began to think to myself. So my great-grandparents, I don't know about them. My grandparents, they were bankers. So they lived happily. They did what they want. They had their children and they had families. They built houses. They did many things and then they died. And then my parents, they are engineers. They have children and they have good jobs. They spend their life luxuriously and they will also die. And me, my parents need me to do my O-levels. Okay, I did. Next, my A-levels. Okay. Next, my diploma, my degree, PhD, second PhD. I become a doctor. Then I need to get married. Okay, I get a good wife. Then my children. I teach them and then my grandchildren and on and on and on. And then at last, I also die. So I began to think that this was like an infinity loop. It goes and goes on again and there's no end in it. And the day that I understood this, that was the day I came to the monastery. When I was at home, there used to be countless number of nights where I used to hug my pillow and cry my eyes off. And in the morning, my mom would come and wake me up. Puta, wake up. And then I would wake up and say, and my mother would ask, why did you sweat so much? And I would tell, oh, it was so hot at night. But I was the only person who knew that it was all my tears that I shed. It was all because of the sadness, sorrow, and the grief I had inside me. And I couldn't express it to anybody in my lay life because there was nobody. But from the day I came to the monastery, I had my teachers with me. And they were there for me to tell my problems, for me to express my sadness, my sorrow. They were with me with my happy moments and sad moments. And they put me through different challenges and obstacles. And I'm not afraid to face them because I know that they are at my back. That's one thing that my teachers told me. We all are pieces of rocks. I think you have seen the Buddha statue behind me. That's also, I think it's a rock. And there's a rock. And to get the image, the Buddha statue, you should all remove the unwanted parts of it. But the removing process is hard. But if you withstand the pain, then at last, the outcome is the Buddha statue. Like they said, no pressure, no diamonds. Without any hard thing, you cannot never gain something good. So, because I know my teachers are with me, I'm not afraid to be. So, I'll tell you a small stanza. Dhammam vinanatti pitacha mata. Namevatana saranam patitta. Tasmahi bokicca manya pahaya. Sunata dareta charata dhamme. My problems can be only solved by the Dhamma. Neither my mother, neither can my father solve my problems. It's only me by myself listening to the Dhamma, understanding it and contemplating it that I can solve my problems. So now, as an Aragarika, I have nothing compared to my lay life. I don't have video games, no films, no songs, no tasty food, you get what we eat. But I don't have anything I had compared to my lay life. But I have one thing. It's the true happiness. I'm happy and happier than ever. I'm free. I have the freedom that I have never felt in my life. So I'll tell you a small quote. La vida es corta. Vive apasionadamente y siente la felicidad. Which means your life is short. So live it passionately and feel the true happiness. So I make this opportunity to invite you all, come join with us to feel the true happiness and to be happy and happier than ever and to feel the freedom that you have never felt in your life. Theruvan Sarnai. May you all attain supreme bliss of me.
So what do you think about that then? Now you heard from a 16-year-old. Who else are you waiting to hear from? A 6-year-old? I'll embarrass you by bringing a 6-year-old the next day. These are the great trophies that I collect in my trophy cupboard at the monastery. When I was a layperson, I used to have many cups and medals that I used to win from athletics and so on. I left them all back when I came to the sasana. But now I have a different kind of trophies. These are those trophies. The many hearts that have been healed. Did you hear what he said? He used to cry his eyes out, cry himself to sleep, and the mother would walk in thinking that he'd sweated overnight. So mothers, when you go home tomorrow to wake up your son, and you see that his pillow is wet, you might be tempted to ask him, Putha, was it hot? And he might say, yes, it was. You can't blame him for it, because you don't have the answer to the problem that he has. So there's no point in sharing that problem with you, unless, of course, you have now taken on the Dhamma and you're beginning to solve your problems with the Dhamma. Dhammang vina natti pita cha mata. Nameva tanang saranang patitta. See? There is no other foundation, no other refuge than the Dhamma itself. Neither mother nor father can come to your rescue. When your mother passed away, did her mother or father come to her rescue? So when you pass away, will your mother and father come to your rescue? In your moments of grief and sorrow, do your parents have an infallible answer? That's the thing. They love you. But if they haven't given you the timeless message, if they haven't shown you pure love, then you are still looking for that love, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we invite you all the time, come and get it. Because there's an abundance of it in the Sri Sambuddha Sasana. It is the source of love. It is the source of love. The Sri Sambuddha Sasana. What you witness was a great victory for that young child. In the last 2.5 years, it might have, would have been difficult, I'm sure it would have been. It couldn't have been easy at the beginning, it might have been tough. That's why he gave the analogy of taking a rock and carving out a Buddha statue from it. Every time you hammer away and chisel away the bits that are not the Buddha, it hurts. Yes, it hurts. But that hurt is worthwhile. What about all the times you were hurt in your lives? Do you think they were worthwhile? When you went through a breakup, did you actually learn a lesson? Honestly, did you actually learn a lesson? Remember your first breakup at school? When you were at school, your first childhood sweetheart, crush, right? That broke down. There was a breakup. Did you learn a lesson? If you'd learned a lesson, would you have what? Would you have gone for seconds? No. So did you learn a lesson? That's the thing. But perhaps your mother was there. Maybe your father was there. Maybe your best friend was there and they said, don't worry. Now you'll get over it. And then you'll find the right person. That's what they said. You'll find the right one. There's plenty more fish in the sea. So you waited for the right one. And eventually you found the so-called right one. And ever since, you've been so happy, haven't you? Not a day has passed where you were unhappy, sad, sorrowful, grumpy, disappointed, frustrated. Am I right? I know what you're thinking. Swamina said, nothing could be further from the truth. That's the thing. Neither mother nor father has answers to these problems, ladies and gentlemen. That is why your children Stay mute when they have problems. When your child does drugs, they will not tell you that they're doing it because they know that you don't have the answer. I'm assuming that I'm talking about parents who have no dhamma, okay? Which in your case might be different now. Because now you have actually begun to mature. People think that maturity is simply growing old and getting more experience. More experience of the wrong stuff is what? Is that good? Imagine someone makes a mistake doing a sum. 2 plus 2 is 5, they think. So to get more practice, they just keep on doing those sums. More and more experience. Every time they do 2 plus 2 is 5. Have they matured? They do that sum 100 times over. 1,000 times. Have they matured? At the 1,001st time you ask them, what is 2 and 2? They'll say it is 5. Have they matured? Is there any point in that experience? No. Experience is only worthwhile when it comes with a dose of wisdom. Otherwise, experience is just a waste of time. Have you matured? Or have you just wasted your time? Don't answer. Think. And then think about what noble companionship has started to do in your lives. Then think about the place that the Mahasangha today hold in your lives and the impact that they have had in your lives. What the truth has done for you. That's why I want you to be that truth. Take the truth, take the message of the truth far and wide, ladies and gentlemen. Every weeping soul needs to hear this truth. Every child who cries themselves to sleep every night, they need to be told this truth. Every girl who thinks that she doesn't look good enough, every girl who thinks that she has to go and spend hours in front of the vanity mirror, doing herself up, making herself up, because she feels that she is not good enough, they have to hear this message. Perhaps your daughter is like that. Maybe she spends 3 hours in front of the mirror before she feels she's good enough to step outside and go out. Have pity on her. Have pity on her. Why don't you love your daughter as much as I love her? Why do you feel as a mother your job is to buy her the best, most expensive makeup kit? How about we make her mind up? Rather than trying to help make her body up. Which one's the more motherly love? You answer. You think. Think to yourself. You need no answers. Just think. That's why I say a mother is in a chitta. You don't have to have a womb to be a mother. So those are victories. The whole family has won. The younger sister is the talkative one. If you thought his talk was nice, you should wait to listen to the other two sisters. They're both, they're good bullets for the sasana. One day you will hear from them. I mean, when we travel to Rajagiriya, we all travel in the same car, right? So typically at our monastery, Swaminarayanas don't travel with females. Why? Because they're bad. Because people's minds are bad. That's why. To me, all of them are daughters. But there'll be people who won't want to see a Swaminarayana getting out of a car on one side and an Anagarika Mahatmya getting out the other. Then we'll be on the newspapers. Yes or no? Had it not been for that, by this time you would have already heard from our Anagarika Dosas. I would have brought them here. Because to bring them again in another vehicle, you have to pay for the petrol, not me. And then it's another trip. But the best thing to do is whenever you're there, you get to hear from them. Did you not hear from one of them last time you came? There are many like them. Gems. We polish them. That's what we do. They were born gems. We polish them. We polish them. And we make them shine. So that the whole world can enjoy their beauty and their glory. Right. Shall we do a merit transfer and bring today's sermon to a close? Now, because I have to finish my alms round by 12, once again, just a gentle reminder, we will make the closing ceremony as prompt as we possibly can, if that's all right with you. Thank you. All right. Let's all take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired today by inviting the Swami Mahasi to deliver the sermon, by coming along and listening to the sermon, by engaging in various meritorious deeds, by creating a conducive environment for all to come along and listen to the Dhamma and practice the path in all comfort. Let us take a moment to transfer all these merits first and foremost to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all monks resident throughout the world, including the Mahanayaka Theras and the Anunayaka Theras of all of the chapters, as well as the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to my teacher Guru Swami Mahanse, as well as all the other monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to friends of the monastery, our devotees, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha by providing the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they all be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees, as well as anyone and everyone who've gone the extra mile on our behalf, who've left no stone unturned to help us, support us and assist us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the sum of the sasana. Let us transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our names, our forefathers, our ancestors, our loved ones, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us also transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe, and those who have lost their lives in natural disasters such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all at some point have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends to us. Let us take a moment to transfer all the merits that we have acquired throughout samsara to all of them out of loving kindness, compassion, and a sense of gratitude for all that they have done for us. Let us transfer all these merits to them. May, by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may, by the power of all the merits that we have acquired today, you and I, may by the power of all the merits that we have acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a rahat and mahanse, or an arahat and mahanse in this life itself, and may we witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahat and mahanses on this blessed land and in the era of this Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga kinnen midatnva Dvesha kinnen midatnva Moha kinnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Raga gini niveva Desha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansapa labe Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva Tunduvange suvisi ananta maha gunabelin Silu loka silu satyom Nibbana paramasukhen suvita daravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.